are many ways you can support Write Up My Podcast, but we'd love it if you pick just one.
You can join our Rump Club via Patreon from as little as £3 a month.
Get exclusive access to behind-the-scenes content, the inside scoop on upcoming episodes, members-only workshops, no-holds-barred Gwen and Kate Wiffle Waffle, and more.
Simply head to patreon.com/writeupmypodcast. Or if you prefer to be a one-off supporter, you can send us a virtual coffee. Head to buymeacoffee.com/writeupmy.
Follow the links in our show notes and we will love you forever. Thank you.
It's right up my street, my boulevard. It's right up my Straza. Oh my God, it's garden right up there. Ah, it's right up my podcast.
Ooh. Welcome to Write Up My Podcast. This is Gwen Watson.
And this is Kate White.
And this is the podcast in which we talk to people about the brilliant ways that they have to make ourselves feel good.
Exactly. And this episode, we are going to be talking all about sleep. The importance of sleep. Oh, it's a doozy. But in the meantime, Gwen, before we go any further, I have to say to the listener, I'm looking at Gwen. She's in Portugal. Sorry for the spoilers. She looks incredible. Relaxed, tanned, a little bit beachy. So happy. I'm insanely jealous.
And I don't want to rub it in, but I am sat here in my bikini because it is so hot.
God damn it, you're killing me.
I won't show you. You don't need a visual.
Hello.
But I'm in Portugales. And since we last spoke, since I got here, Portugal has moved from the green to the amber list.
And yep, thanks, Boris.
Yeah, thanks, Boz. And also, my return flight has been cancelled. So,
So you're never coming home.
I ain't coming back. So I hope that the sound quality is okay, because this is what it's going to be like for the rest of our lives.
Gwen now lives in Portugal. How much Portuguese do you know, Gwen? Come on, impress us.
Obrigada.
Oh, obrigada.
Cerveza.
That is the extent. Yeah, all the important stuff.
Yeah. This morning I learned how to order a milky coffee. So that's,
How do you order a milky coffee in Portuguese?
Shit, I knew you were going to ask me. Something like miel leite.
Oh, cheeky.
Yeah. Do you know what I do though? Because I did a French degree, so I speak French. And during my A-levels, I did a term of Spanish. And I have been to Italy once. So I just, whenever I go away, I just speak pan-European. And
really?
I just pluck out these words. Portuguese, I think, is a little bit difficult because it's quite different.
Yeah.
It's similar, but it is quite different to the others. But I find myself like going in. I was with my friend the other day who lives here and I was ordering a coffee and I was like, un café descafeinado con leche, por favor. And I was like, how was that? She goes, is that Italian?
What language are you speaking exactly?
But it gets the meaning across.
Well, this is it. If people understand what you're saying, then don't sweat it, you know?
Yes, exactly. But you speak French too, don't you? You speak French better than I do.
Je parle un petit peu de français, mais oui.
Yeah. Don't put yourself down. You speak better than that.
Yeah.
Are you pretty fluent?
Well, no, I'm not pretty fluent, but I couldn't go out for dinner and have a really fluent conversation, but I'm really good in the practical setting. So if you need me to go into that laundrette, talk to the lady and sort out your machine that's got clogged, I'm your girl. But if you want me to go and have dinner with your dad, then we're gonna dry up pretty quickly.
We always need somebody like you on the team.
Yeah, exactly. But I have to say, I mean, it's pretty clear what you've been doing to make yourself feel good. And what you've been doing is not being at home, being anywhere other than home.
Do you know, it's been miraculous, I have to say. Like, having spent so much time at home over the last year, like most of us have, to suddenly be in a different country is just... like, I keep having to pinch myself, and especially because so many people, I mean, I joked earlier about it changing from green to amber, but it has disrupted so many people's travel plans. So I am really, really grateful that I am here, and I'm staying with a friend, and I still work when I come out here, and I can still work when I get home when I'm quarantining. So I'm very, very grateful to be here. Yeah. I honestly am. And, you know, so yeah, I'm working, but at the same time, I'm also waking up in a sunny country and going and buying lovely, delicious pain au chocolat and or fresh produce and going out for cheap beers and cheap coffees. And yeah, just walking about in sunshine is just, yeah, I'm very lucky. I'm very happy. So it's like normal life, but a load better.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
How about you, Kate? So you've been away somewhere a little bit closer to home.
A little bit closer to home, but still feels so good to just be away doing things. I sort of did a magical mystery tour around the country visiting various people, and now I've just got back from the Gower, the beautiful Gower, and the sun was shining, and we were at this campsite that was right on the beach. You just have to walk over the sand dunes, you're in the beach. We went surfing and barbecues and, you know, collecting driftwood off the beach, have bonfires in the evening. It was heaven. I feel like I've had a whole new lease of life pumped into me. It just felt so good.
Sounds amazing.
Yeah. And it was just that feeling like, oh, I remember what it feels like to feel a bit footloose and fancy free and feel a bit light, you know, lightness in yourself. And I think during the last 12 months, there's not been that much of that, has there? The footloose and fancy free has not been easy to access.
No, and so for those listeners who are not familiar with the UK, the Gower is in Wales. So obviously
yes,
my hometown, so my homeland. So it is one of the most beautiful places in the world.
It's stunning.
So what were you doing? You were camping and you were with friends?
We were with friends and we were camping and it was brilliant. But I did decide that I was going to drive there from the Lake District, which was an odd decision. And it took me, because there was loads of roadworks on the M6, the sat-nav sent me basically into North Wales and then just through all the country lanes, twisting down through Wales, down to the Gower, which was stunningly beautiful. But it
took me, beautiful.
So beautiful. But it took me 7.5 hours. And there's
Holy
only so
shit.
Much beauty you can cope with, you know. And 7.5 hours.
Oh my God, this is still so beautiful.
Still bloody gorgeous. Yep.
Fuck.
So that was one hell of a drive. I felt delirious when we got there. I just kind of like wobbled into the campsite. And my friend was there and they'd already got the fire going. She had a gin and tonic ready made for me. Happy times and relax.
Oh, look at you. Do you know what? You do look, you do look restored.
Although I've got myself a bit of a black eye. I had a collision with a surfboard, which went right into my eye socket. So I've got a little...
Ouch.
Nobody is giving me the level of attention that I need for this black eye. Everybody I show it to, they're like, yeah, I could just about see it.
Like, did it hurt? Were you brave? Did it make you cry?
It really hurt. Oh, and I was really brave. I was very proud of myself.
Oh, mate. Was that somebody else on their bloody board cutting in across your wave, across your massive wave?
There's one of those moments I thought, oh, shit, I've really injured myself really badly here. And then my friend looked at me. She was like, no, you look fine.
Oh, you fine. Thought you'd lost an eye, but it was all still intact.
It's all still intact. There's no bloodshed. We're going to live to see another day.
Good.
I sent you a picture of it. I sent Gwen a picture of it, thinking, oh, yeah, this is going to look really good. And then when I looked at the picture I'd taken, I was like, I just look like a haggard person.
I did need to zoom in a little bit. And, yeah, I'm going to say the gravity was not conveyed via that photograph via WhatsApp. However, I'm here for you, Kate. You're a very brave girl.
Oh, thank you very much. Thanks, Mum.
It's right up my podcast.
So this is episode 15, the penultimate episode from season 2. Oh, my God.
Yes.
Time flies when you're just having the best fun in the world.
It really does. This has flown by.
It's flown. And can I just say, been so much easier than the first one. I feel
oh
like
my God,
we've actually learnt shit.
Bloody loved every minute of this second season.
And I don't think we've actually cried once.
No.
Whereas we may have done more than once in the first season.
Tears were shed in the first season. It was a difficult birth.
It was. We got through it. We got stronger. We learned shit.
This is the easy second child.
Yes. Yeah. Which we don't take any photos of. So Kate, what is this episode about?
This episode, we are talking all about the art of sleep. And we spoke to Dr. Narina Ramlakhan, who is a neurophysiologist and a leading sleep expert. So she works with people who struggle with fatigue, insomnia, stress and burnout, as well as writing best-selling books and delivering TED Talks. Now, just a little point for the listener here. You may want to have a pen and paper at the ready when you listen to this episode, because there is so much info in here about how to sleep better. So we started our chat with Noreena by asking her, why is sleep important?
I think there's an intelligence in the fact that, you know, nature has designed us to spend a third of our lives sleeping. You know, when we sleep well, it repairs the body on so many levels, not just physically, but also mentally and emotionally. And I believe spiritually, you know, so that we wake up with the inspiration and the creativity and the passion for life. So I think there's an intelligence in the fact that nature has designed us to need that amount of sleep, because it's so important for our health and our well-being and our happiness.
And so conversely then, what happens when we don't get enough sleep?
Yeah, when we don't get enough sleep, I think we're very well adapted to cope with the odd night of bad sleep. And I think there's such a spotlight on sleep. I mean, I've watched this in the last 25 years that there's a fascination with sleep. And now globally, the sleep industry is worth billions of pounds, billions of dollars. But I think to some degree, we've become unhealthily fixated on sleep. And that's probably an interesting thing for a sleep expert who makes a living out of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We can all cope with the odd night of bad sleep. And again, if nature had designed us to keel over if we didn't sleep well after, you know, one night, we'd probably be extinct as a species, you know. So, but then on the other hand, if it goes on over a period of time, which I've experienced in my life, which is one of the reasons why I got into this work, if it goes on for too long, it starts to erode our physical health, our emotional health. It affects our relationships. It affects our ability to focus on at work. It affects our passion for life.
Yes. I always feel if I'm getting enough sleep, I can cope with anything that day-to-day life throws at me. But as soon as I'm not, I really struggle, even with the simplest things.
So, Kate, have you always been a good sleeper?
I have. I've always been one of those people that can sleep anywhere. I can sleep in a car, on a train, propped up against a wall if needs be. but recently, I've not been sleeping so well, actually, because I'm very busy and I'm struggling to switch my brain off at night.
Okay, so there's a couple of things there. First of all, I want to speak to the first point that you made. So you're what I call a martini sleeper. Okay. I'm not alluding to your relationship with alcohol or anything. A martini sleeper can sleep anytime, any place, anywhere, virtually. They don't know why I have a job. Whereas on the other end of the scale, you have the sensitive sleeper, which is the way I used to be. I was very much a sensitive sleeper, and sensitive sleepers need their side of the bed. They need things to be just right before they can sleep. Whereas a martini sleeper is more likely to sleep on a problem. They'll say, I don't want to talk about it now. I need to go to bed and sleep this off and I'll feel better tomorrow. And the sensitive sleeper will say, how on earth can you sleep? We've just had an argument, you know? Uh-huh. So the sensitive sleeper, their nervous system takes a while to settle. And I have noticed, this is something that I've picked up in my years of doing this work, as well as personally as well, that sensitive sleepers are more well adapted to deal with bad sleep. They can still function. I can function on really bad sleep. I've given my best presentations. I've got my best marathon times when I used to run marathons. Whereas people who are used to sleeping well, your martini sleepers, when they don't sleep well, it really seems to hit them. And I think there's a psychological thing going on as well. But it could be that sensitive sleepers have adapted or honed to their other energies so they're not so reliant, because they've become so used to the odd night where they don't sleep well.
God, I'm nodding away here. That is exactly me as far as a martini sleeper. And yeah, as soon as I'm not getting enough sleep, boom, everything else falls apart. That's really interesting. What about you, Gwen?
Yeah.
What sort of sleeper are you?
Well, I was saying this. I think I generally am a good sleeper. I think when I get to that point where I'm not coping with life, it's when I go to bed too late. And it just has such knock-on effects the next day. And I really feel like I'm playing catch-up. And I'm just, I'm just a bit late for everything, or I start multitasking and I'm not very focused, and I don't manage to get out and do my walk in the morning. Actually, this sounds like most days. But I'm exactly the same as you. And I was thinking when you were saying, Noreena, about if you just have the odd night here and there of not having sleep, it doesn't have too much of an impact. I actually think as I've got older, sleep has become much more important. And now I'm a woman in my 40s. If I don't have a good night's sleep, it throws everything off.
So it could well be the same thing that I'm saying, you know, that you've got very used to it being good. And I think also in your 40s, we start to go into those perimenopausal, menopausal years, or those years, you know, those phases of life where the demands have changed and we might be dealing with children, we might be dealing with elderly parents, you know, the sort of so-called sandwich years. And we've got, and you know, financial pressures or professional pressures where, you know, we're trying to take our career to the next stage. So I think it's quite a significant life stage, and certainly we need good sleep. And you've mentioned something there, which is one of my five non-negotiables, you know, if I'm trying to help my clients to get good sleep, which is to try to get to bed earlier. That's one of my sleep techniques, is get to bed earlier. That 90-minute phase before midnight is a very enriching and healing phase of sleep. And a lot of people are missing out on that these days because of blue light, because of Netflix, catch-up TV, whatever it is. They're missing out on it, you know. So, yeah, it's important that we have good routines so we can get the sleep that we need. I mean, our energy, that you know, you've heard of the circadian rhythm, the 24-hour clock, which, you know, goes up. You know, we expend energy during the day and then we recover energy in sleep. That's the circadian rhythm. But built into that is something called the ultradian rhythm, which is shorter, which is about 90 minutes. And that's the hum of your energy through the day. So our energy goes up and down. It oscillates in 90-minute cycles. But that 90-minute cycle, if you look at, you know, I'm trained as a Western scientist. I'm not a medical doctor. I should have said this at the beginning. I'm a neurophysiologist. But I've also studied a bit of Ayurveda, traditional Chinese medicine. And I mean, you look at those, the ancient Eastern sciences, they give us a more holistic picture of what's happening with our energy and these phases throughout the day. And it seems to suggest that 90 minutes before midnight is particularly enriching for your sleep. And maybe there's a survival instinct in that, it's designed from the point of view of survival, so that, you know, if we're woken during the night by a saber-toothed tiger or something like that, the chances are we've, inverted commas, you know, we've had that 90 minutes before midnight, we've had that first enriching phase of midnight. And it's all synchronized with the periods of light and dark in the environment, the light levels, the dark, you know. So as the light level starts to drop in the evening, and it drops below about 200 lux, it sends a message through the retina, the back of the eye, to the pineal gland to switch on the circadian timer, which regulates the production of melatonin. So there's a whole cascade or dance, if you like, of hormones and neuropeptides, which, as the light levels drops, are set up to give us the best possible sleep. Unfortunately, a lot of people use that up by falling asleep in front of the TV and then they go to bed and can't sleep.
Yes, this happens all the time. Yeah, and then you wake up and you're like, oh, I feel absolutely fine now, just as you're about to go to bed.
That's really interesting, because this is what happens every single winter, isn't it? And I always call it the internal, like, battening down the hatches, that we naturally get really tired earlier in the day. But our society tells us that we need to fight against it, and we need to keep working, we need to go out and socialise in the evenings, whereas all I want to do is just get comfy and just get horizontal. And every year I think, oh God, look, this is it. I'm getting older. Oh God, my energy's gone. And then spring comes, I'm like, oh no, it was winter. And I always think that we shouldn't be fighting against it, should we? We should be responding to our body's natural urges.
Yeah, our natural rhythms of, you know, with the rhythms of nature. And in fact, I'm writing a book about this at the moment. This is my fourth book, and I'm talking about feeling safe. But I'm using I'm bringing a lot of analogies with nature into it and the seasons. Yeah. And yes, I think as we go into autumn and winter, there's a natural inclination to want to sort of draw in, you know, and be more introspective, if you like, more inward focused. And I think the pandemic has certainly made us more like that. I've always been like that anyway, but it's made me even more so, and now starting to emerge and thinking about going out again, which is quite something, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah, it's causing a lot of anxiety for a lot of people, isn't it? Well, and I'm feeling it. I think this idea of suddenly going back to normal, I think we've all got quite used to having our closed down or our much smaller lives, haven't we?
I think so. And you know, for an introvert like me who does an extrovert's job, it's been a bit of a haven for me to do. You know, I've been very busy throughout the pandemic, but all my presenting has been done from my home, which has been lovely.
Yeah. Do you know what I was going to ask? I was going to just re-ask something about the 90, you know, the 90 minutes thing. That really fits with something somebody said to me years ago, which always stuck with me. She said, the importance is not getting 8 hours of sleep necessarily. The important thing is the time at which you have those 8 hours. So she was saying, like, it's better to go to bed at 10 than at midnight because, she said something to me about, like, your cells start breaking down and that it's irreparable, the damage that is done the longer that you stay awake before you actually go to sleep. And, I don't know how much of that is true. I've never even really looked into it, but it's always really, really stuck with me. Is that what's happening?
Yeah, sleep phasing is really important. So along with the going to bed, which is why it's important to go to bed before midnight, that sleep before midnight really sets you up for sets the rhythm of the whole night's sleep, if you like. And all of this is intelligently linked to the light dark levels in our environment. So, you know, getting your 8 hours by starting at 8 and waking at 6 is not the same as going to bed at midnight and then sleeping on until, you know, it's just not quite the same thing. And again, you know, if you look at traditional Chinese medicine, you look at the Chinese medicine clock, it will, and I describe this in a couple of my books, the third one, The Little Book of Sleep, where I there's a diagram of the Chinese clock. In fact, no, in the second book as well, I talk about this. I talk about the phases of sleep and how they enrich the body and the brain in different ways, you know, and how each different phase seems to do something different for our emotional health and our mental health as well. So the sleep phasing is really important, as well as quality of sleep. It's similar, saying the same sort of thing, but, you know, it's not just about getting hours, but it's about getting good depth of sleep. I think Gwyneth Paltrow called it clean sleep. I call it sattvic sleep. Sattvic is from the Hindi word meaning pure. So it's about getting pure deep sleep, getting the right amount of dreaming sleep, the right amount of slow wave sleep, the right amount of light sleep. You know, so the brain is actually working quite hard when we sleep at night.
Okay. Mm. Yeah. So what is the brain doing while we sleep at night?
Yeah. So when we're sleeping at night, we're reordering the filing cabinets and packing away the information of the day, you know, but especially in the world that we're living in now, where we're constantly dealing with so much information and we don't take enough breaks from our screens. So we're constantly bombarding the frontal lobe, the working memory, with information. When we go to bed at night, your sleep has to almost detoxify all of that information.
Okay.
And there are cells in the brain called glial cells, which are detoxifying. So they clean up and they enable you to process information and they enable memory storage to optimize memory. And so not surprisingly now, they're doing a lot of studies looking at the impact of poor sleep on the development of neurological disorders like Alzheimer's and dementia and Parkinson's, you know. And we dream when we sleep at night, and the dreaming it can be a source of creativity, but can also be to make sense of our world emotionally. Mm. So we might dream to deal with our emotional stresses or the life events and things like that. So there's all that mental and emotional balancing, but also when we sleep at night, it gives the body the chance to produce growth hormone and all the other hormones that enable tissues and cells to repair or divide, you know. So it's very important for muscle recovery. You know, I used to work with Chelsea Football Club, some of the athletes there. Okay. And, you know, we did a lot of work on napping and getting good sleep, especially if they're training hard and competing.
We recently sent your new policy documents to you, but we don't seem to have received any payment yet. We are therefore writing to check that you've received the documents and to remind you that to remain covered, payment is now due. You'll find the details attached of how you can pay. However,
already sent your payment. Please ignore this and we apologize for any confusion. We look forward to hearing from you.
And you said that there are these different phases of sleep or different phases during the night, and we need to make sure we get the right balance between dreaming, between other sleep phases. How do we have any control over that?
Well, by making daily choices that enable us to sleep well. You know, right. Our sleep is not, it's not about your thread count. I mean, she says this and she's the, I'm the sleep expert for the biggest bed company in the country. I'm a silent night bed sleep expert. But, you know, all of that does help. And certainly I put a lot of, place a lot of importance. I mean, my bedroom needs to be the way I want it. The colours, the smell, the feel of the mattress, the pillows, the duvet. I think about all of this sort of stuff and the oils I use. So all of that will help to optimise my rest at night. But from the minute you wake up, until the time you get into bed, you're preparing yourself for how you're going to sleep.
Yeah. Ooh, love that.
So all of those choices, you know, the breakfast you eat, how many cups of coffee you have or tea, you know, whether you did go out for that walk, how many times you're on your devices, whether your screen time is up or down, whether you're hugging people, whether you're, you know, well, all of that, because it makes you feel safe. Okay. Yeah. So, you know, that's why this last year has been awful for people's mental health, because man is a social animal. We're meant to hug. We're not meant to be in isolation.
Right. Yeah. And that is impacting directly our sleep.
Yes. Because when you feel safe, you produce the hormones oxytocin and serotonin, the well-being hormones, the love and trust hormones. So when you feel safe, you end up in thriving mode. You end up living in the right part of your nervous system. And the thriving part of your nervous system is the rest and digest. Yeah. Or the parasympathetic, and that's what enables you to sleep. When we make choices that bring us closer to safety, then we sleep. But if we behave, you know, like we did at the beginning of the first lockdown, where we become hunter-gatherers, rushing out and buying toilet paper and rice and pasta and stockpiling eggs and things, you're telling the brain you're unsafe. So not surprisingly, sleep problems went right up.
Yeah, right.
Because people were living in the wrong part of the nervous system.
Yeah, I was wondering whether the collective trauma of the pandemic had a big impact on our sleep. And so I take it it did.
I think it did. I mean, it's individual trauma and there's collective. And there was the fact that, you know, for many people, it's not something I do, but many people are constantly watching the news, looking at social media, constantly. I mean, I have a neighbour who has terrible chronic fatigue, but she's constantly on Twitter. Mm. I mean, I love her to bits because she helps dog sit, but, you know, she's constantly sending me all these Twitter things about latest COVID reports, conspiracy theories, you know, vaccine reports and things like that. And I'm thinking, no wonder she's got chronic fatigue.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't, she's constantly telling her brain that she's not safe.
Something you mentioned earlier as well was that we are assaulting our frontal lobe. I'm not sure if that was the actual terms you used, with screens right up until we go to bed. And we talk about screens a lot on this podcast. I think there's really not enough being done to kind of help us or prevent us from these ridiculous addictions that we've all got every day in our hands. But I was reading this article at the weekend about how there's, I can't remember what they called it, it's about languishing and how we're all kind of somewhere between flourishing and depression. We're just kind of coping in a very meh kind of way at the moment. And one of the things that people are doing, it's like a delayed procrastination. But when we get to the end of the day and we feel that we've not been able to achieve stuff, or we feel that our day's been robbed by our children needing our attention or work needing our attention, that is when we turn to our devices, because we're kind of trying to claim our time back. And so there's a new habit of us going on our devices late at night in a bid to kind of reclaim that time for ourselves. But that's actually, we're doing ourselves a great disservice, aren't we? Like, just how destructive is it? How disruptive to our sleep is it to be on our screens late at night?
Well, I mean, I spoke at a big conference yesterday and they said, you know, okay, to sum up, it was only a half hour keynote, you know, if there's one thing people could do differently, well, what would that be? And I said it would be to get these out of the bedroom.
Yeah.
You know, don't let this be the first thing you look at in the morning and the last thing you look at night. And it's interesting that you say they need to be doing more to to help us with our addiction. Actually, no, we need to be doing more to sort out our addictions. You know, what do they need to do? They don't need to do anything. These things are the enemies. We are the ones that need to take responsibility and say, I'm putting it on silent. I'm going to go and watch The Office USA. I'm working my way through the series. It's brilliant. But phone goes in another part of the house. It's on silent. It's always on silent anyway, which is why it's a pain when I lose it. But it's always on silent. It's never in my bedroom. At night, I've got one of these old-fashioned things called clocks.
Oh, a clock, yes. That's what people...
They still make them, and it's $7.99, and you put that in your room, and you don't look at the time during the night. Mm. You get your phone out of the room, boom, I'm going to be sort of out of business pretty soon.
Yeah.
You know? So we need to take responsibility for ourselves and for the sake of our children, where the influence of technology is getting worse, which is why mental health problems with young people is going through the roof. But they watch the adults setting the wrong example. And I know it's very difficult. I mean, I have a almost 17-year-old who I brought her up to not have the phone in her devices in her bedroom, but she doesn't live with me now because she's doing her A-level somewhere else. So she's always got her phone in her bedroom. And not surprisingly, her headaches have gone up, you know, it's worse.
And my nieces do, and they're 10 and 14, and they've always got their devices in their bedroom.
Yes, it's something that I think about a lot because my eldest daughter is 8, nearly 9. So she's just coming to that age where she's aware of, beginning to be aware of the existence of devices. Yeah. And actually, she's a terrible sleeper. She's too young. She doesn't have a phone or an iPad or any of that stuff. So that isn't in her life right now. But she does really struggle to sleep, and she struggles to stay asleep. Mm-hmm. That's the bigger problem, actually. She'll wake up multiple times during the night.
Right. OK. So does she have a clock in her room?
Yes, she does. She's got one of those grow clocks that tells you when you can get out of bed in the morning.
And can she see the time during the night?
Yes.
So she needs to not see the time during the night.
OK.
So when we're sleeping, we go through stages of consciousness. It's normal to wake up during the night. On average, we wake between 10 to 15 times a night for our survival. So perhaps you can tell her that what she's doing is normal, waking up during the night. It's normal to wake up during the night. We check the cave is safe. We go back to sleep. So what is not normal or desirable is to stay awake and worry about it. Now, what brings us into full consciousness? So if I was wired up to a polysomnograph with electrodes stuck to my head, you would see that I'm fully alert at the moment. My brainwave activity is showing a predominance of beta waves. If I start to get daydreaming sleepy, I'll go into alpha state. If I start to go into dream state, it's theta. Deeper than that is delta. And at night, we rebound in and out of these states, hopefully not going to beta. To go into beta mode, if we're in beta mode, we can register numbers. Or if I put that the other way around, if we're registering numbers, if we're looking at something that's telling us the time, it pulls us up into beta mode. So she's unnecessarily waking herself up.
Right.
So I don't remember waking up 10 to 15 times last night. I remember waking up twice. But, you know, so the important thing is it's normal. The other thing is we might be more asleep than we think we are. We can get up and go to the loo and be more theta alpha than we think, you know.
Yes.
So you need to either get a different clock in her room, turn the digital display off it. Because what I like about this clock, I I'm not on commission, but you have to press down on it to actually see. And it's funny because last night I actually... I got into bed and realised I still had my Fitbit on. So I took it off and put it on my bedside table, which I never normally have it there. And then during the night, I wanted a drink of water and I nudged it. And it felt like the whole room was flooded with light.
Right. Mm.
So, you know, it's just the smallest amount of light can really wake us up, you know. So I would either get a different clock or switch off the light function on the clock. Tell her not to worry. Tell her to use this technique to put yourself back to sleep. Which is you close your eyes and maybe put one hand, your left hand, over your heart. I did this with Philip Schofield once this morning, by the way. I think he thought I was completely insane. But left hand over your heart, you can put your hand on the other hand on your belly and just think about what am I grateful for in my life, or who do I love, or what do I really enjoy? Just to think of something positive, think of something good. What am I grateful for? What happened yesterday that was lovely? Was it having that ice cream with mummy or whatever, or playing with whoever? Just think of something good. Yeah. Or you can use something called havening, which is you put your arms around yourself and you gently, while thinking of something good. And that rocking movement using bilateral stimulation puts you to sleep.
So for people listening, Narina was just giving herself a self-hug, really, weren't you then? You're wrapping your arms around your shoulders and giving yourself a self-hug.
Yeah, and it's called the havening technique. Havening. Okay. And it was developed for people suffering from trauma and PTSD. So the havening is a very specific technique where you bilaterally stimulate. You know, I've got my right hand on my left shoulder, upper arm rather, and my left hand on my right upper arm. And I'm just rubbing my arms up and down and also bringing a little bit of hugging into it. And it's very, very soothing. Very soothing.
Yeah. Especially in this day and age where there's lots of us not getting
hugs. Exactly. Yeah. And
that feels lovely and comforting.
And it's very safety inducing as well.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. And that's something we can use at any point during the day.
Totally.
You mentioned one of my absolute favourite words in the world earlier. You mentioned napping.
Mm.
Is this something that you are hereby approving for us all to do? And is it something that we can do every day or not?
I totally advocate napping. And there are many different types of naps, but the one that I recommend that people can do every day is almost a form of meditation. It's the power nap. So it's a very specific thing. So it's not getting into bed under your duvet and snoring for 2 hours. It's a near sleep state for 5 to 20 minutes.
Okay.
5 to 20 minutes near sleep state, closing your eyes, breathing, not lying. You can lie down, but don't get too comfortable. Set an alarm. I will do one sitting this afternoon or lying on the floor of my conservatory. It's carpeted and heated. Lie there for 20 minutes or so breathing, or I might do a meditation practice during that time. Now, it's at some point between 2 and 4 in the afternoon, but no later. Any later than that, it'll affect your sleep, and no longer than 20 minutes.
Fantastic. That is my kind of nap.
You mentioned earlier about the 5 non-negotiables of sleep.
Brilliant question. I was hoping you'd ask that. Okay.
So please enlighten us.
So the 5 non-negotiables come from my 20-odd years of working with millions of people, if you include the media work as well. And I noticed that there were 5 things I was saying over and over again to people to help to clean up their sleep. So we weren't going into the trauma stuff or relaxation techniques or breath work or anything like that. I noticed, even when I worked for 10 years in psychiatry, get people to do these 5 things first for 7 to 21 days, because everyone's different. Some people respond just like that, really quickly. Just get the people to do these things, and then they will start to notice a difference to their sleep and their energy levels. Right, what are the 5 things? Number 1, eat breakfast within half an hour of getting up. If you wake up with anxiety, or if you wake up feeling exhausted in the mornings, don't do intermittent fasting. Don't skip your breakfast. Eat within half an hour. Include a source of protein. So it might be as small as a banana with some walnuts or almonds, small handful. That's your first breakfast. Then do what you have to do, and then have a bigger breakfast a little while later. Great for weight loss as well, because it stimulates the metabolism. But it's really good if people are waking up with anxiety. So eat within half an hour. Don't use caffeine as a substitute for food, because a lot of people wake up in the morning with anxiety. They can't face food, but they want a cup of coffee or tea. Okay. So don't have your tea or coffee until you have eaten. This is all about helping to bring about that shift in the nervous system from surviving into the thriving part, the parasympathetic that I talked about, that bit that enables you to sleep at night.
Uh-huh.
Cut back caffeine. No caffeine after 3 in the afternoon. Okay? So we've got the 2. We've got breakfast, we've got caffeine. Hydrate. Drink about 2 litres of water a day, minimum. That's dilute squash, herbal teas, alkalized water. That's pinch of salt and lemon juice in there.
Mm-hmm.
Number 4, earlier to bed, as we've said, 3 or 4 nights a week. Number 5, get your technology out the bedroom and cultivate a healthier relationship with technology during the day. You know, I mean, I go out for a walk with my dog. I never take my phone. Occasionally I do if I'm listening to a podcast or there's something really important that needs to happen, a call I need to take. But 99% of the time I'm out in nature without my phone. And then, I love coming home and looking forward to seeing what's happened since I've been away. But allow yourself tech-free time. Designate bathrooms and toilets as tech-free zones. You know,
good idea.
Dinner time with the family, no phones at the table. Sit and watch something on TV, don't have your phone with you, put your phone on silent. Wait 20 minutes, 30 minutes in the morning before you switch your phone on. You know, and all of this enables us to navigate our way through life, feeling more at peace with ourselves, more centered, more in connection with our soul, with our faith. Because I think we've become very disconnected from the fundamental divine nature of who we are. Yeah. And everything is about what's going on in the world. And we've forgotten who we are. And these things play a big part of that, but we need to take responsibility. Oh, I need to get off my soapbox, don't I?
Oh, no, it's fascinating.
No, I love that.
Thank you so much to Noreena for taking the time with us. She's such a busy woman, so we really appreciate her taking the time with us to have that really fascinating chat. And if you want to find out more about Noreena, you can go to drnoreena.com and also make sure that you check out her Instagram and YouTube channels, as she's got loads of really inspiring and interesting help and advice about sleep and energy on those channels. So it's well worth checking out.
I loved that interview so much, but I have to say one of my favourite parts of it is when she name dropped Philip Schofield.
I know.
That was so great. It's like we are in great company. Pip Schofield and then right up my podcast.
If it's good enough for Phil, it's good enough for us. So there is so much useful and practical info that came out of that one. How did you find it? What are your thoughts, Gwen? Did you have a go at these five non-negotiables?
Yes. Now, I would like to just fess up straight away that I've definitely done some of the five non-negotiables.
Yeah.
In fact, I've probably done all of them, just not all in the same day.
Yeah, just scattered over a couple of months.
Yeah. It was definitely my intention to do all five for an entire week. And in fact, that's what I said to you, like, Kate, we've got to do all five for an entire week.
Yeah.
And then I came to Portugal and I've been drinking like a fish since the minute I got off the plane. But yes, for me, the ones that I have, the changes that I've made that have made a difference for me, I discovered on my phone there's a bedtime setting.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, so you can have your phone kind of go to grayscale at bedtime. So it goes off at like 10:30 and then it comes back into full colour at 6:30. And let me tell you, flicking through your phone and doing shit on Insta is not the same, and it's not even worth doing when it's black and white.
Right.
So it immediately makes me, like, within seconds, I've turned my phone off. So
that was enough of a deterrent for you to put the phone down.
Really good. Really good.
Okay.
Gonna fess up again that since being on holiday, I've learnt drunkenly how to disable that after.
I love it. It's like the drunken half of your brain is sniggering away, fighting against the practical part of your brain. Ha ha, you can't trick me. I can get around this.
It's going to take me a while, but I'm going to disable this thing so you can watch some Insta reels for an hour before sleep. But that has been a really, really helpful thing. The other thing that I loved that she said was about eating as soon as you get up, or eating with half an hour. Because I tend to, I've been doing a lot of the intermittent fasting, and I think that it's good for me to not, and I think there probably is some good evidence to suggest it is good for you not to eat until like midday. But I've really enjoyed maybe just being given allowance that I can eat within half an hour of waking up. So I don't know if that's had actual positive benefit, but I like being able to eat earlier. So that's...
I love trying to fuse all these helpful bits of information together into our life. So you can say, right, I'm fasting. I'm not going to eat till midday, apart from that breakfast that I have 30 minutes after getting up because Dr. Noreena told me to. But then I'm going to fast.
Fasting is out the window. But and I like what she said, because a lot of people don't feel like eating that early, but you can just have a banana and nuts.
Yeah, so it's, doesn't have to be a full fry up.
Yeah, not every day of the week. And Do you know, funnily enough, I was watching my favourite TV show the other day, Feel Good, and it's Mae Martin, the Canadian comedian, and Charlotte Ritchie, the one who's recently been in Taskmaster.
I love Charlotte Ritchie.
I love Charlotte Ritchie.
She's so likeable.
So likeable. And in it, she was havening. You know, she talks about the giving yourself a hug.
Yeah.
And this is something she does where she feels a panic attack coming on.
Right.
And I just thought, yeah, that's so nice. That feeling of feeling safety and how that feeling can really help you sleep. And actually, you and I were talking about this after the interview, about the difference. When I moved back here from Australia and I moved in with my mum in my 30s, and how well I slept knowing my mum was in the next room. And I had her come and like tuck me in every night. And if she went to bed earlier than me, I felt a low-level kind of anxiety.
Yes.
And I could never quite put my finger on it, but I just didn't like her going to bed before me.
Yeah, I can completely relate to that. And it's funny, isn't it? Because you sort of think, oh, well, you grow out of these things, but you don't. I can completely relate to that. That comfort in knowing that someone else is still pottering around the house, or someone else is going to lock the front door and you're up, tucked up safely in bed. I remember feeling that massively as a kid. I used to hate it. When I got to the age when my parents would go out in the evening and leave me at home on my own, I used to hate it. I used to lie there waiting for them to come back. Or I used to hate it if they were in the house and they went to bed and I was still awake, you know, when I was younger.
Right.
And now my own daughter hates that. She's like, don't go to bed. I'm still awake. And there's nothing I love more than if we've got friends or family to stay. And I can hear them moving around the house and I'm in bed. I'm like, oh, I'm so safe. I've got a house full of people.
Exactly. And think of how deeply kids sleep generally, how deep, like the freaking tornado could be happening and they're not going to wake up because they feel so safe.
Yes.
Whereas as we shift into adult role where we're responsible for the safety of the house, we're waking up at every noise.
Absolutely.
Like, the fuck's that? And especially when you've got kids, I guess, you're listening out because you've got to look after them.
And this havening thing, that's really interesting. So she used it to, if she felt a panic attack coming on. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
I've told a few people about that technique and done it myself. And it feels really comforting.
It's really comforting.
Yeah.
And getting a hug is so good. I met an old friend yesterday and he was like, oh, can I have a hug, please? My hug quota's just running out, or my hug, you know, levels are just running down. So we had a massive hug. He's like, oh, yeah, I'm replenished.
Yeah.
And it's like, there is something, like she was saying, that us humans, I can't remember what she said, but basically we need it, don't we? We need that physical contact.
She was saying that one of the reasons why people have slept badly during the various lockdowns, because they're not getting hugs and they're not getting that physical safety thing. More hugs.
Can I just take, I went on BBC Bristol talking about this recently, saying that actually I think we can hug quite safely if you just hold your breath as you go in, because you can breathe out over people's shoulders.
Yeah.
Just don't breathe on them as you're going in or out.
You don't have to lick their neck while you're hugging them. Yeah. Just turn your head the other way.
Although I do like it when you do that, I have to say.
I saved that
special
one for you.
Kate hug.
Oh God, Kate's here again. I better wash my neck before we meet.
But yes, so I haven't done them all at the same time, and obviously you've ruined the sleep by boozing every night this week. But yeah, the small ones that I have done have had a great impact. How about you? I feel like you've done a better job of the homework on this one, haven't you?
I did about 3 or 4 days of the non-negotiables, and then I did about 3 or 4 days of like throwing all the non-negotiables out the window and doing everything she told you not to do, but not intentionally. Then I got to end it. I was like, oh, that turned into an interesting experiment, didn't you? Turns out Dr.
You've done
Narina,
a really good experiment.
Yeah, turns out Dr. Narina knows exactly what she's talking about, because I slept like shit the last couple of nights.
Right.
So, I did it. I got up early, because I always got into the habit of I'd get up and I would have a cup of tea. That'd be the first thing I'd have, and then I'd sort of potter around and then maybe half an hour later have some breakfast. So getting up and having a banana, I'm such a follower of rules. I was like, I'll have a banana. She mentioned almonds. Yep, I'll have some almonds as well, just to do it exactly
like
she said.
Love you for this.
And that felt good. Later on, about half an hour later, I'd have some toast or whatever my normal breakfast would be. Mm. Unless I'm socialising, I do tend to go to bed kind of early. So this is another thing. These 5 rules for good sleep and having a social life don't necessarily go hand in hand.
Tricky.
So sometimes you've just got to choose one or the other, haven't you? But yeah, no caffeine after 3. I did that, no caffeine after 3. I then, I never really drink enough water. I think I am perpetually dehydrated. So I failed on that front. But yeah, I was going to bed 10, 10:30. and keeping my phone plugged
lights
in.
Lights out by what time?
Lights out before 11, I'd say.
Perfect.
And then keeping my phone plugged in, charging downstairs. Slept like a baby. It also coincided with a time where I wasn't feeling anxious about stuff. I wasn't feeling overwhelmed with work things. So, you know, there's that that played into it as well. Slept like a baby. Then...
Oh, well, there you go.
I fell dramatically off the wagon. Had a couple of days where I had a coffee late, went out with friends, having some drinks, in bed late, sat up at 2 o'clock in the morning, scrolling through Insta, wondering why I can't get to sleep. I don't feel tired. Right. I just don't understand why not, as I keep scrolling.
That espresso martini was so delicious at the end of the night.
Yeah, and look at all this hysterical content I'm finding online. Why aren't I asleep yet? It's a mystery. But it was quite good to see those two things back to back and be like, well, yeah. Of course I slept terribly those other nights. I was just like everything that you shouldn't do just happened. And then the nights when I did the things that she said, I slept good. And I'm definitely, if I'm at home and I've not got social plans going on, definitely going to carry on trying to go to bed early.
Okay, so this is my next question. Yeah. Yes. So are you going to do it again? So I think you've made a good point there, haven't you? That actually perhaps on the nights where you're socialising, you can only do, say, 3 of the 5.
Yes, completely. Because otherwise you become a machine, don't you? And you want to also... Mm. Your soul needs replenishing in other ways as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So you're going to keep doing it?
I'm going to keep doing the eating within 30 minutes of getting up. I'm going to keep doing the, when I'm in, trying to go to bed early. The caffeine for a while now, I've known that if I have caffeine too late in the day, it's a no-no. After those nights where I had that really good quality sleep, I felt so different in the morning. I felt like I had not just physical energy, but mental energy to take on board whatever was coming my way, even the simple things. Whereas those nights when you've had too much to drink or I've not slept well, you wake up and automatically you're starting the day on the back foot. Straight off, you're getting out of bed feeling like,
feeling shit.
How many hours till I can get back into bed again? It's such a horrible way to start the day. What about you?
I think my peak of life is going to be when I manage to do all 5 in one day. That's going to be a moment when I celebrate. I'm going to be like, where's my medal? But I definitely, I mean, I'd forgotten about the water thing actually, but I have been drinking that much since being here. All of that stuff I definitely want to do. And this having the bedtime thing set up on my phone has been life-changing.
Yeah.
And she was also saying, don't go on it when you first wake up. So that's something I've got to remind myself of, because I definitely switch it on the moment I'm out of my bedroom.
Yes.
Yeah. So I definitely want to try and do as many of them as possible, as often as possible.
I thought it was interesting what she was saying about how sleep has become an industry. Like, loads of people are jumping on the bandwagon of trying to develop bits of tech that are designed to help you sleep better. And that actually she was kind of hinting, I think, that really none of that stuff is that helpful. It's simpler than that. You don't need an app that sits, you know, an app on your phone, and your phone sits on your pillow next to you and tells you how many times a night you've woken up and all those things.
And that's interesting, because I think most of us will be horrified, and I think people are, where their Fitbit tells them they've woken up 12, 15 times in the night. And she's like, that's c'est normale. That's what we do.
Yeah. And you see that result and you think, oh my God, I've got a problem.
Yeah, which actually, no. So, yeah, I think her non-negotiables are actually really simple, and I think would be, really simple, but could lead to, feeling a lot better. So a good night's sleep is the good start you need to your day.
Thank you so much for listening. And as always, do email us at writeupmypodcast@gmail.com. We always love hearing from you. And likewise, you can follow us on Insta and Twitter at writeupmy. We love hearing all of your comments and your feedback.
Especially when it's positive. We love that.
Yes. Lots of smiley emojis, please.
Also, if you'd like to share some positivity with us, we would absolutely love it if you could go across to Apple and rate and review us. And if you wouldn't mind sharing us with your friends
That'd be nice.
And why not head over to Patreon? You can find us at patreon.com/writeupmypodcast. And there you can find all the episode extras, the various worksheets, the bits of audio that we talk about in our episodes. You can find them and enjoy them for free. And while you're there, you can also join the Rump Club for a mere £3 a month. And
join us!
Join us! And as part of that, you get all of the fabulously talented Andy G's jingles with all the lyrics. You get to enjoy various odds and sods of extra content, and we would love to see you there. And in between seasons, you get to enjoy the regular Wiffle Waffles, the chit-chats that Gwen and I put out then as well. And that brings me neatly on to the very important thank yous to our incredible team of people that help us put this together every 2 weeks.
That is Andy T, who does our editing, Andy G, who creates the incredible music, Erica Francis George, who creates our artwork, and Kasia Wheel, who painstakingly listens and tells us what we should cut out. Girls, can't believe he said that.
And we'll be back in a couple of weeks where we are going to be talking about dreams. And I'm really excited about this because it leads so nicely on from our sleep chat with Dr. Yogi.
So nicely.
Such a smooth segue.
Almost like we planned it.
Well, you would have thought, wouldn't you?
let's say
we did.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, keep trying all the things
to make you feel good. Bye-bye.
Tell me, did you like the podcast, Brian?
No!
Oh. If, unlike Brian, you thought our podcast was really great, then don't hold back, like, subscribe, and tell your mate. But if, like Brian, you thought our podcast wasn't fun, then just keep quiet, don't feel the need to tell anyone. Oh, we'd love to hear from you if you've got some thoughts to share. Such rich and lovely views that all should be aware of. But I hope you liked our podcast and you thought it was really great. And if you did, like, subscribe and tell your mate. 'Cause we don't need grumpy pants bringing everybody down. No, we don't need negative Nellies making people frown. No. So I hope you liked our podcast and you thought it was really great. And if you did, like, subscribe and tell your mate.